Dear students, we have reached our final chapter of our journey together, and in this chapter we discuss both retirement planning and estate planning. We've done a little bit of retirement planning throughout the semester in bits and pieces, but now we're going to concentrate on it in this presentation. Then we will discuss estate planning, the final chapter of life. And in between, we'll have a little discussion of what's going on right now with the baby boom generation. But let's get started on slide number one. By 2030, 76 million baby boomers will have retired. Yeah. But only 46 million Gen Xers will have come up to replace them. What's going on? We'll discuss that in our next presentation. But first, let's take a look at an oft-heard lament of senior citizens. If I knew I was going to live this long, I would have done things a whole lot differently. So we're shouting at you young folks from across the generational divide. Yes, we are. You know what I'm going to tell you eventually, right? Get started now. But anyway, let's divert to slide number two. Why should you think about retirement planning now? Well, because people are spending more years, 16 to 20, sound like a test question. How many years in retirement? 16 to 20. Yeah, see, it used to be people retired at 62 and died at 64, or they didn't make it to 65 when they planned to retire. But now people are living far longer. It's a great problem to have. It creates its own problems, but it's still a very great problem to have. A private pension and Social Security are most often insufficient to cover the cost of living. What private pension plan? They are all disappearing and being replaced by individual defined contribution plans. What are they? Relax. We'll discuss it in just a moment. Inflation will diminish the purchasing power of your retirement savings. If inflation stays around 3% or so, it's been a little less than that for quite a few years, but over the long haul, it's about 3%. That means prices are going to double in about 24 years. Remember, 72 divided by 3. So by the time you're ready to check out, everything will cost twice what it did when you started your retirement. Slide number three. How do you estimate your living expenses? Well, spending patterns will change. Some expenses may go down. Some will stop. Anything, you know, related to the work expenses and clothing, and hopefully you've paid down your mortgage if you have one. Income taxes should go down, but other expenses will probably go up. Medical, leisure, gifts, and contributions. In some cultures of some families, the cultures of some families, it's just expected that the grandparents are going to donate to the grandchildren. Oh, they have to go to a private school. Oh, well. Did we say inflation will raise the amount you need to cover your expenses over your probable 16 to 20 or more years in health in retirement? Right. The tricky wild card, in my humble opinion, is healthcare. It's the only thing that really scares me with respect to my life and my retirement. Because, you know, you follow all the things that we do in Business 121, you pay down debts and invest wisely, save, and then some major healthcare thing happens and your insurance says, yeah, forget it, we're not going to touch you, and then you're wiped out. Yeah. Ooh. Slide number four. This is how the average, whatever that is, older household spends its money. And this is according to the Labor Bureau statistics. It's kind of hard to get a handle around their numbers because they chop it up into little bitty pieces, different 55 to 60, 65 to 60 to 65 and 65 to 70. So I just took 65. And you see that housing is a major expense. Well, if you've purchased a home, paid down your mortgage, my hope is that that will go down and not continue to rise as rents rise. But, you know, there are some senior housing options available. But if you want to continue to live in Southern California, San Diego, you know rent's just going to keep going up because it's... Have you ever lived in Buffalo or Youngstown, Ohio? The weather here, we are weather snobs. But look at transportation. And I think, this should go down with the advent of driverless cars and the ability to just call up a vehicle when you need one and take you to where you want to go and drop you off, and then it'll work on somebody else. So the price of transportation should come down. Here's the one that I have a hard time believing. Healthcare. I think that's going to be higher in the coming years. But yeah, we'll see. So food at 13%. People worry about the price of food because it certainly seems to be a huge expense. But when you put it in the grand scheme of things, it's really not as much as we feel. We just go to the store and oh my goodness, what are they asking for that? But again, remember the cost of convenience. If you just prepare your own foods, you're going to save a whole lot of money. Slide number 5. Planning your retirement housing. Consider the cost of living and taxes. But here we are in San Diego. What are you going to do? Most people prefer to stay in their homes because after 30 years, 20 years, whatever, it's not a house anymore. It's your home. And the statistic, which really hasn't changed, it changes that 6 out of 7 people will remain in their homes. Why are the retirement homes and the nursing homes and the continuing care communities bursting at the seams? Just because there are so many more baby boomers. But there's still about 6 out of 7 who decide to remain in their homes. And we discussed that reverse mortgage where you're able to literally draw money out of your house by literally adding a loan onto your house. And then the cool thing about it, the one major benefit, is that they cannot foreclose. But be very careful because, as we mentioned in the past, there are sharks in the water who love to take advantage of the elderly. So be careful. Get a very good lawyer or other real estate professional that knows loans and to read over it and make sure there's no gotchas in there. Now, some people will decide to relocate. They decide, look, San Diego's just too darn expensive. I'm going to go someplace with a lower cost of living, fewer taxes. But then they decide, you know what? I think I'm going to come back to San Diego. It's not such a bad place. Oh boy, yeah, if you sold the house or condo or whatever, it's going to be really tough to come back, isn't it? So what I recommend to people is rent for a year or two. Rent where you're going to live and then rent out your place here. Make sure you get a good property manager because you won't be in the neighborhood. And then after a year or two, if you're really happy where you move to Port Washington up on the Olympic Peninsula or out in Arizona and Sun City, Tucson, Green Valley, sure, then it's time to sell the place or just, you know, keep it for the rent. But at least you'll be able to move back in case you wanted to move back to San Diego to our weather snobs. Now, more and more Americans are retiring abroad. Yeah, Costa Rica, anyone? The Philippines, Baguio, Ecuador, Cuenca, it's called? Yeah, Cuenca. And people think that if you leave the country, you don't have to pay your federal income taxes. Wrong. You still have to pay your federal income taxes. You don't pay California taxes anymore because you're not a resident in California. But health care is an issue. And if you either don't sign up or cancel your Medicare and then decide, you know what, I think I need to go back to the States for medical for services, you're going to find that the Medicare is going to say, well, you got to pay us for all the years that you disappeared, because we're not going to play that game. Because often the dynamic is the person moves to another area, which is a whole lot cheaper, out of the country, and then their health is failing, so they move back to the States, they want to get the good health care, and the Medicare says, no, that's not right. So you're going to have to pony up, dear students. Slide number 6, planning your retirement income. Let's talk about social insecurity. I'm sorry, social security. Oh, boy. Social Security has just been lambasted upside down, left side, right. If you ask younger folks about their probability of seeing a Social Security check, they will tell you that they have a bigger probability, they believe they have a larger probability of seeing a UFO, alien spaceship, in their lifetime. And there are problems with Social Security, but nowhere near as much as people make it out to be. It has been a very successful program. Now, here's the one problem with it. It was never meant to be your sole source of retirement income. When it was designed back in the late 1930s, it was meant to supplement your retirement income. So maybe a better name would have been supplemental security or something along those lines, because somewhere along the line, people got it in their heads that, oh, Social Security will pay for everything. Wrong. Wrong. It is not true. So it even though it's been a very successful program, people believe that it's the only thing they have to worry about. And that's not true. You have to do your own savings to prepare, your own preparation. Once you turn, I think, 60, they start sending you the earnings and benefits statement, but you can request it at any time. The full retirement benefits range from 65 to 67, depending on the year we were born. You will see next, I think it's the next slide. But what you'll hear people saying is that Social Security is going broke. No, Social Security is not going broke. Medicare is going broke, and it's not because the Medicare program, it's just because healthcare is bankrupting us. But Social Security, if nothing changes, and that's what we'll discuss in our next presentation on the baby boom generation, it's going to wind up paying or being only able to pay 70 to 75% of what has been promised, which is not good, but it's not going broke. And so there are things that we're going to be able to do, assuming we can stop yelling at one another and work on the problem, that will shore up Social Security and at the same time hopefully educate people that don't depend on Social Security alone. Okay? All right. Here are the full benefits years. Notice that it started with 65 if you were born before 1938, and then up until 1960, it moved to 67 years. So depending what year you're born, and most of you watching this, listening to this, were born after 1960. So 67 years. So let's see. People are now living, 15 years longer, 17 years longer than they did back in the 1930s, but Social Security has only gone up 2 years in that time. We'll come back to that later. Slide 8. What about your employer? Well, the old, what is called defined benefit plan. Now, you hear people call it a pension or a traditional pension, but the legal term is a defined benefit plan. These are disappearing. The idea was you'd work for a company for a number of years, and they would then say, great, we're going to pay you a certain amount of money depending on how much you made, how many years you worked here, and your age when you retired. And we'll pay you that for the rest of your life. Right. And this is when these were designed when people just didn't live that long. So the companies and the municipalities and the federal government are saying, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Wait a minute. And when I started teaching a million years ago, I took a 20% pay cut to leave the industry. So I didn't think I was going to be teaching very long. It was a temporary full-time position just for one semester. And I figured, what are they going to do, fire me? But they gave me all this materials. I'm looking at this pension plan. I'm thinking, this is pretty good. You know, you're not a part of Social Security. You're part of the California State Teachers Retirement System, CalSTRS. And this is pretty darn good. So, hey. And plus, I just absolutely adored teaching. I just fell in love with it, the students, with making their little minds work differently and challenging them. And I reapplied, and I've been here for about a million years or so. So thank you very much, Southwestern College. Thank you very much, CalSTRS. But in the defined benefit plans, the employer makes the investment decisions for your and their contributions, because you're sometimes you pay into it. We pay into it. We pay now a little over 10%, and then the employer pays into it too. But your benefit amount stays the same regardless of how the investments perform, unless the fund goes belly up, which is what started happening in the 1980s and 90s when companies were raiding their defined benefit plans and then declaring bankruptcy. Would anybody do that to their employees? Oh, yeah. Social Security is an example of a defined benefit plan. So these are disappearing. Why? Because we're living longer. Again, it's a great problem to have. Plus, people just don't work 30 or 40 years for one company anymore. So what are we replacing these with? Slide number 9. Defined contribution plans. And again, that's the legal term, but most people don't use that term. We call them 401k plans. Profit-sharing plans, employer-sponsored plans. The retirement plan now, instead of being tied to the employer, is now tied to you. So the cool thing is when you move, if you move to another company, you can take it with you, which actually makes a lot more sense because of especially the way the economy changes and the jobs change all the time and the companies morph and the like. So there are various plans, but by far the most popular one is the 401k and the 403b, which is its public employees counterpart. It's a dumb name, 401k. Where does it come from? It comes from the Internal Revenue Code. And in section 401k, it outlines the provisions that if your employer does this and you do this and Domini, 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 Sanctus, Sanctus, Spiritus, the IRS doesn't tax you until you in retirement. And they're very, very cool, folks. But we go to the IRS and we say, you know, can you come up with a better name than 401k plan? And they say, oh, yes, we like to call them salary reduction plans. Right, that's what I want. I want my salary reduced. Why don't they call it the most fantastic, fantabulous, awesome retirement plan you could ever have? Because the truth is, dear students, if you start early, as we discussed way back in Chapter 1, you invest, you contribute prudently, consistently, with an eye toward long-term growth, and don't get greedy when the markets roar, and don't panic when the markets fall, your retirement could be very, very comfortable. You have the opportunity to do better than any of these previous defined benefit plans did. But at the same time, if you don't contribute, if you don't invest wisely, if you chase after the next big thing every time the markets roar ahead and you panic and run when the markets fall, you're not going to have that comfortable retirement. So there are opportunities here, but there are also dangers and pitfalls. We will discuss the match. They give you free money. And we also discuss the Roth, as it's called, option in detail later. Slide number 10. Estimating your income and your expenses can be done using these retirement calculators. Now, every company has one. I think these are two of the better ones, American Funds and T. Rowe Price, but Vanguard and the banks have them, and the insurance companies have them. And basically what they are marketing tools, because that you put in what you're making, how much you're saving, what you expect your how old you expect to live and when you expect to retire, and it comes back and says, oh, you need to save more. Here, talk to one of our representatives. But they're useful. And the tricky question is, how long am I going to live? If you knew, then you could plan it more accordingly, right? And run up a bunch of credit cards before you kick out. But you don't. And so we discussed the longevity calculator, play the longevity game back in chapter 10. Remember that it still uses Flash, so you might have to tell your browser that, yes, it's okay for these people to use Flash. And then, as we said, Social Security will send you an estimated benefits upon request, or just wait until you're 60 and they'll start sending them automatically, but just go to their website and ask for one. And these tools, they're useful, but again, how long are we going to live? We don't know. That's the issue. Look at your family, look at your lifestyle, and then know that tomorrow it could be your last day. Or you might live to over 100. And you younger folks, if trends continue, 100 is going to be very, very doable for most of you. Which is why you should start saving one, just another, and keep exercising, and don't smoke. Yes, mother, get plenty of rest. Slide number 11. Let's now focus on the different types of retirement accounts, because there are many. They're all basically cousins and sisters and siblings of brothers of one another. They all work basically one of two different ways. They are either pre-tax, sometimes called before-tax, or they are post-tax, sometimes called after-tax. And the idea is you get a tax break now with the pre-tax, or you get a tax break later with the post-tax contributions. And there are, pros and cons, advantages and disadvantages of each, as we will discuss. But for the pre-tax contributions, those are the 401ks, the 403bs, the 457s, the 401as. Most people are going to have a 401k through their private employer. The federal employees, military included, have what's called the Thrift Savings Plan. It's a 401k plan, but it has its own section of the Internal Revenue Code. The traditional IRA used to just be called the IRA, but now called the traditional, to differentiate it from the Roth IRA, is for everyone. Anyone who earns income can have a traditional IRA. Now, there's some confusion that we'll discuss in a bit and that you'll probably forget all about until it affects you, and then then you'll have to bone up or have somebody explain it to you. But everybody who earns income can have a traditional IRA. Then for smaller companies and self-employed, there are a couple of sisters and brothers of the IRA, different variations, the SEP, the Simple IRA, and the KEO, which is kind of not that popular anymore, but I just love that name, KEO. It reminds me of the Wizard of Oz. And I know you might be thinking, huh? Remember near the end when the guards are in the witch's castle and they're going, yo. I know. It's very, very disturbing where my mind goes sometimes when it is allowed to wander on its own. But all these share the same common aspect. that you get a tax break now, and later on you pay taxes in retirement. But along around 1998 or so, a new form of retirement came about called the Roth IRA. And it's named after a gentleman, William Roth, who was a senator at the time, who didn't like his retirement plan. He was not too happy with the way it worked out, so he wanted to offer people something different. And so they named it after him, the Roth IRA. And then we put in quotes the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b, because that's not their legal terms, but that's what everyone calls them. The IRS just calls them a 401k with after-tax, post-tax contributions. You don't get a tax break now, but you get a tax break later. In fact, if everything goes according to plan, your retirement income will be tax-free. Pretty cool, as we'll see. Slide number 12. Here is a slide that we took a quick look at in chapter 11. And it's trying its best, and my humble apologies for the graphics, to show you that there are basically two different types of accounts. There's a taxable account, and then there's what the IRS calls tax-qualified. Retirement accounts are only one type of tax-qualified. There are health savings accounts and medical savings accounts and educational savings accounts, but they're, you know, very similar. They have different provisions, but very similar. If you have a taxable account, also called a regular account, there are no limits on your contributions. You can put as much money into it as possible. There's no limit on your investment types. And you pay taxes every year on rent, on interest, on dividends, on capital gains. Right. And this is what you set up, even though you probably didn't know it, when you went to the bank. You set up a regular account, unless you told the bank otherwise. They opened a regular account for you, a taxable account. And notice that we can have any type of investment. This is supposed to be like a bin or a basket. I know it doesn't look that way, but that's what it's supposed to be. And we can place anything in there. Now, notice I crossed off the things that you don't want, because they're too darn dangerous. And if you don't believe me, take Business 123 and we'll scare the living pants off of you, because these things can lose money faster than you can imagine. But the major assets classes, which we discussed already, stocks, bonds, cash, real estate, mutual funds, they're what you're going to put in there. Now, in the retirement account world, the 401ks, the 403bs, the IRAs, traditional IRA, Roth IRA, you have strict limitations on your contributions, which we'll take a look at in the next few slides. You also have strict limits on the investment types. For example, they only want to see stocks, bonds, short-term investments, cash, savings accounts, certificates of deposits, and mutual funds. Now, there's a couple of exceptions, which, you know, we'll discuss later on, but those are the main investment options. Folks, stocks are risky enough. You don't want to be doing anything more riskier in your retirement account. And the IRS, the Congress sets the rules. The Congress doesn't want you doing it either, so they're going to limit your investment types. And then, as we said, your taxes are either deferred, which means you pay them later on in retirement, or in the case of the Roth, they're tax-free. So although there are many subtle and not so subtle differences, the major differences between a regular taxable account and a tax-qualified retirement account is how much money you can contribute, how they are taxed, and what are the investment choices, the options you have available to you. Slide 13. Okay, let us now begin taking a look at these different types of retirement accounts in detail. The granddaddy of them all, the individual retirement arrangement? Wait. Isn't it individual retirement account? Well, yeah, that's what everyone calls it, but legally it's called the individual retirement arrangement. But nobody's going to use that term. The most popular personal retirement plan, it is now actually called the traditional IRA, And the reason the IRS added that word traditional is because they didn't want to create, or trying to reduce confusion between the old IRA and the Roth IRA, which is about 20 years old now. Anyone can, with earned income, can contribute to a traditional IRA. There's a little bit of confusion because the Roth IRA has an earnings limit, but that earnings limit is bogus, so we'll get to that later on. So anyone, if you have earned income, meaning you worked for a salary or an independent contractor, business, whatever, you can contribute. Normally, your contributions are tax deductible. However, if you have a 401k plan or other employer-sponsored plan at the place you work, then your contributions may not be deductible. You can still make the contributions, but the IRS will say, no, it's a non-deductible contribution, which is a bit of a problem. I mean, it's not a problem from a retirement standpoint, from a contribution and accumulation standpoint, but it just means you have to do more paperwork. You have to keep track of how much is pre-tax and how much is post-tax, and that's something only an accountant would love. The contributions limits are increasing with inflation. In 2019, they're up to $6,000. And if you're 50 years or older, you can put in $1,000. Remember back in chapter three, I asked you to look up this. And of course, if you needed to, you'd look it up. You don't have to put in $6,000. You can put in $650 a month, but that's the limit. Your investment grows tax deferred, and you must pay taxes on the amount you withdraw when you are retired. Well, that makes sense. You didn't pay taxes on the way in. It's time to pay taxes on the way out. And this is normally for most people age 59 and a half. There's a couple of sneaky ways you can get the money out earlier, but once you reach 59 and a half, you can take it out anytime without any penalty. Once you reach 70 and a half, they require you to take the money out according to a certain schedule that the IRS gives you. And this gets people very angry, especially people who are still working. Why do I have to take this money out? I'm not retired yet. So there's some talk in Congress about raising it. We'll see what happens. But just figure at 70 and a half, it's time to start taking the money out and enjoying it. But remember, these numbers were created a long time ago when people just weren't living as long as they are now. So maybe it is time for the Congress to change those numbers. I sort of think, why do they care? They're going to get their money eventually, right? Whether eventually they're going to get the money because somebody, whether you or your heirs, pull the money out, they're going to have to pay taxes on it eventually. Slide 14. And then the IRS has many cousins and siblings and whatever, the 401k, the 403b, the 457, the TSP. TSP is Thrift Savings Plan. That's for federal employees. These are all employer-sponsored plans that your employer offers to you. Now, notice the limit is much higher, $19,000. Yeah, and that doesn't include the match. And then if you're 50 or over, $6,000 extra. Wow, that's $25,000 a year. Look, folks, if you have two incomes and you're married, right, you have two incomes, and you live off of the one person's income, and then you take the other spouse's income and stuff it into your 401k at work or 403b, and we didn't even discuss the match, you do that 5 years when you're in your late 20s, early 30s, 10 years at the most. You'll never have to touch your retirement again. You'd be assuming you invest prudently, wisely, with an eye toward long-term growth. Don't get too greedy. Don't panic. Yeah. And then there's the SEP IRA, the simple IRA, the simple 401k. They're more for smaller businesses. And they have, some of them have various advantages over the other. My favorite is the simple. It's very easy. I don't know if that's why they call it the simple, but for small businesses, 401ks are expensive. you know, if you have a very large business, you're amortizing the cost over, you know, 1,000 or more employees. But when you have a small business, it's, you know, it's a big chunk of change, anywhere from $2,000 to $8,000 a year to manage these darn, these 401ks and the like. Whereas it's simple, it's $10 per, or so, depending on this plan, 10 bucks per employee. So you get 5 employees, 10 employees, it's, you know, $100. And some of them allow the employees to pay them. So small businesses usually like that. And that's pretty cool. $13,000, that's no chump change. I mean, that's a lot of money to put away. And then $3,000 if you're 50 or over. The simple 401k is usually for people who don't have any employees. There's some advantages to that. It's a lot cheaper than a regular 401k, but you really should just be a mom and pop shop that doesn't have employees. Now, the Roth. The Roth is the counterpart to the traditional IRA. It's the same limits. It's $6,000 a year, $3,000 if you're married. I mean, if you're married, you're 50 or over. Oh, by the way, you can contribute on behalf of your spouse, even if the spouse does not have earnings. So you can contribute $6,000 for yourself and $6,000 for your spouse, even if they're not working. And then we said the Roth has the no tax break now, tax break later. We'll get into that more in detail. And then the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. They're really not called that legally, but that's what everyone calls them. It's just a 401k or a 403b, which allows you to put money in after tax. And they all, as we say at the bottom, work very much like the traditional IRA, pre-tax contributions, tax deferred, except for the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b, you have post-tax contributions, and then in retirement, they are tax-free. Yippee! So, let's take a look at an example on slide 15. You have a 401k or 403b at work, or 457 or whatever. You get the 401a, there's a whole bunch of them. But the two biggest are the 401k and the 403b. 401k for businesses, for-profit enterprises, and then 403b for school districts and hospitals, non-profit enterprises. So you contribute to your paycheck $100. Now, it depends on your marginal tax rate. And let's just use 25%, even though that one's been temporarily suspended. It's down a little lower, but let's just use 25% because that makes it easy. And then let's say you're at the higher level of the 25%, so you're paying 8% to the state of California. That means the feds are going to give you $25 to put away $100. State of California is going to give you $8. They're going to give you $33. Well, they don't really give you $30. They don't write you a check for $33. What they do is they take $33 fewer out of your paycheck. So you put $100 into your 401k, and you only see your take-home pay reduced by $67. But the whole $100 goes into the account. You see what's cool? You get a tax break now. Plus, we didn't even discuss the match. On this slide, you don't even see the match. Your employer might put in $50 on your behalf, or $100. It's typically anywhere from $50 to $100. Some of them will do $25. Yes, up to a certain amount. After that, you know, maybe 3% of your paycheck or whatever. Depends on the company, what they offer. 403Bs, we those of us in school districts, we don't get a match usually. Not at Southwestern, at least. And most other school districts don't give you a match. But the businesses, they do. And so that means you might put in $100, see your take-home pay reduced only by $67, and you have $150 or $200 in your account. Such a deal! Okay, Piano, what's the catch? Well, you know, nothing's free, right? There's always a catch. Well, there are advantages and disadvantages. Let's not make it nasty. You know, you pay income tax on the amounts withdrawn in retirement. And the conventional situation is that people in retirement are usually in a lower tax bracket. Now, there are some people who say, what are you talking about? You're crazy. You don't want to trust those bums. They're going to raise the rates. They might. Yeah, the rates are going to go up. We know that they're very low right now. But if you are in such a position that you're taking so much money out of your retirement accounts, congratulations. If you're not, if you're in a higher tax bracket, I am very happy for you. In fact, I hope that all my students and my clients and my wife and I mean, I hope we're all in really high tax brackets in our golden years, because it means we're doing okay. You know, I love when people complain about paying taxes. I say, I got a way. I know a way. You don't have to pay any taxes. Give the money to me. I'll pay the tax. Anyway, if you withdraw the funds before retire, right, you pay the income tax and you pay a penalidad, a penalty, 10% typically. In other words, the Congress is saying, look, you know, this is your retirement plan. Don't raid it. Don't go after it. But there are some exceptions. First-time home purchase, which is very cool, right? Higher education for you or your kids. Medical disability and financial hardship. Well, my understanding is that the IRS is not too lenient when it comes to financial hardship. But obviously, medical disability, they can't argue with that. So you still have to pay the income tax, but you just don't have to pay the 10% penalty. But look, folks, this is what 401ks are for. You put the money in, you kiss it, and I'll see you in 30 years, or 20 years, or however far you are away from retirement. And let it grow. Let it have compounded annual rate of return of 8, 9, 10%. Prudent long-term investments. Don't get too greedy. Don't. I think I said this already. Yeah, okay. It takes, you know, people need to hear it. Okay, so now let's take a look at the Roth IRA, the Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. They work a little differently. You put in $100 into a Roth IRA, say from your checking account, right? Or if the Roth 401k through your paycheck, what do the feds give you? Nothing. What do the California give you? Nothing. I mean, nothing. You don't get any money from contributing to a Roth now. And your disposable income is reduced by $100. Now, we're not including the match if it's a Roth 401k, but let's just say you put in $100 and you see your disposable income reduced by $100. So why would you contribute to a Roth IRA? And here's the answer, because folks, people are going to ask you, why are you, because you're going to do it, right? I know you're going to do it. Nod your head, yes. You contribute to a Roth IRA, and people say, why are you contributing to a Roth IRA? And here's the answer on slide 18. Because a Roth IRA is so cool! Tax-free in retirement is a golden opportunity. No other investment choice comparing apples to apples comes close. Why? Well, there's some scenarios where you could say, you know, it would have been better if you had done the traditional IRA or the whatever, you know, but in general, the tax-free in retirement, why? Because you not only are the contributions tax-free, well, they're yours. You already made those, right? You already paid taxes on those. You already made the taxes on those. But all the earnings and the compound earnings are tax-free. And I think, I don't know, but I think eventually the feds are going to say, this was a big mistake. Well, let's get rid of them. And you already hear people hear grumblings about how they're going to limit the tax-free ability in Roth IRA. So, okay, so somebody making $200,000, $300,000, we're going to tax your Roth IRA earnings. I don't know. We'll see. Seniors have a lot of sway with Congress. People, because seniors vote, and so we'll see what happens. It's not changing my mind. I love the Roth IRA. I tell everybody should have. I say everybody should have a Roth IRA. So contribute to the Roth IRA. Plus, here's another cool thing: your contributions you already pay taxes on, so you can withdraw the contributions at any time with no penalty. Well, that makes sense, right? You already pay taxes on those. So the IRS says, hey, take them out. No big deal. And so this makes the Roth IRA also an excellent intermediate term investment account. You can use it for the purchase of a house or other high ticket item. And they're great for college expenses. Why? Because when you filled out the FAFSA form, not the FAFSA, but the FAFSA form, did they ask how much was in your Roth IRA or your parents' Roth IRA? No, currently they're not used in financial aid calculations. Whereas if you put money into a 529 plan, which is an educational savings account, or you put money in the child's, in your name or the child's name, then the FAFSA says, wait a minute, damelo, give us the money, because they consider that liquid. Whereas the Roth IRA, 401ks, traditional IRAs are not. So when people say, should I put money into an account for my child? I say, have you funded your Roth IRA yet, or your Roth 401k? Have you done that? Well, it's not the same for the Roth 401k. You can't take the money out without any penalty. So I shouldn't have said that. My apologies. Have you funded your Roth IRA yet? No. Go. Put the maximum there first, and then, you know, worry about your kid. It always reminds me of the airplane when you fly in an airplane, they say, put the mask on your face first. You know, it doesn't do any good to help somebody else and then kill yourself, right? So the Roth IRA is so cool. However, slide 19, the Roth IRA is not for everyone. Well, that's what we're supposed to say. As a broker, we're not allowed to say, this is everyone should have one, but you know what? Everyone should have one. So there, I don't care, FINRA. They'll say, well, wait a minute. There's limitations on Roth IRA contributions. Yes, there is, but there's a way to get around them. There are limitations. There's a limitation on how much you can contribute depending on your income, but it's so easy to get around it. They call it the Roth backdoor. Let's see if we can follow me on this one here. Only single taxpayers with an adjusted gross income of $122,000 or less in 2019, or married couples with an adjusted gross income of $193,000 or less in 2019 can fully contribute to a Roth IRA. After that, it starts to phase out and then it disappears. If you don't qualify, again, congratulations, you're not doing too badly, but here, that number goes up every year with inflation. You can still contribute to the Roth IRA anyway. Well, some people don't know how much money they're going to make, you know, depending on the situation, and especially business owners and the like, or salespeople. So why should you not be able to contribute? You should be able to contribute and then realize, oops, I made a mistake. So you contribute to the Roth IRA anyway. And if you do go over the limit, or you knew you were going to go over the limit, you then recharacterize the contributions. That's the verb that the IRS uses, into a traditional IRA, because a traditional IRA doesn't have that same contribution limit. Before you file your taxes, actually you have until October of the year, so you don't have to. You can do it after you file your taxes, but it's better to do it before you file taxes. And then you immediately, on the same day, you turn in the paperwork all together. I've done it for people dozens of times. You then convert the traditional IRA back to the Roth IRA. Huh? Well, did you follow me on that? You take the Roth IRA contributions, you recharacterize them into a traditional IRA. You then convert the traditional IRA back into the Roth IRA. Who voted for these bozos? Oh, yeah, we did. And what they should do, if they're not going to listen to me, of course, but they should just get rid of the contribution limit. It doesn't make sense. Why should traditional IRAs have that, not have a contribution limit, and a Roth IRA have the contribution limit? All it does is confuse people, and they believe they can't do it, and then when you tell them they can, they don't believe you. And then you say, look, here's the paperwork, and they go, oh, okay. Am I going to get in trouble with the IRS? Well, I certainly hope not, because I've helped people do it. It doesn't seem very hard. It seems like a no-brainer. Okay, now, slide 20. This is very cool, folks. Tax credit for low-income earners. Up to 50% of your contributions might be turned into a tax credit to you. So let's say you put in $50 a month, that's $600 a year. You might get $300 back in tax credits. That's a maximum of $2,000, but still, that's a good chunk of change. And these limits are not that strict, in my humble opinion. $32,000 for single filers. And of course, it goes up with inflation. $64,000 of adjusted gross income for married filing jointly, and $48,000 for head of household. And remember, a tax credit is a dollar for dollar reduction of income taxes. Do we love tax credits? Oh, yes. So if you do your own taxes, don't forget this. Most of the major software programs, I know TurboTax, figures it out pretty easily. If you have someone do your taxes for you, make sure to remind them, look, I put money into a Roth. Look, I might put money in my 401k or my TSP. And if they're good, they should go, cool, you might get a tax credit. So don't forget, that's free money. And if you don't ask for it, is the IRS going to call you up and say, hey, Fred, we see that you're a liar. We should really give you these $300. They're not going to do that, folks. You have to claim it. Okay. Slide 21. We danced around this. Let's take a look at it in detail. The Roth 401k, the Roth 403b. Why are they in quotes? Well, as we said, that's not the legal term. They're just a 401k or a 403b that allows for pre-tax and post-tax contributions because the default is pre-tax. Your employer does not have to offer the option because it's more work for them, right? But they can, and they often do, because these are software packages that are sold on a large scale to employers. So the post-tax contributions work like a Roth IRA. But as we said, as we mentioned, and because I made a little mistake, the contributions cannot be taken out without taxes or penalties, as you can do with a Roth IRA. You basically have to leave it in there. Now, this option is very popular with workers in lower tax brackets because they don't need the tax break now. But in my humble opinion, it's not quite as good as the Roth IRA because the Roth IRA, you can take the contributions out. So that makes it good for a home, purchase, down payment fund, or sending the kids to... Don't take it out to go to Tahiti for a few weeks, all right? If your company matches the contribution, then obviously the Roth IRA is the winner. But now listen to what you, if you don't, if you don't understand what I just said, what I'm going to say, then don't worry about it. But just know that it's a bit of an accounting nightmare because you have to keep track of how much was pre-tax in your account and how much is post-tax. Because when you go to take the money out, the IRS is going to say, oh, it's all pre-tax, pay us tax on all of it. But no, IRS, no. I mean, I already paid taxes on some of it. So, you see, that shouldn't be the decision that keeps you from using the Roth 401k or the Roth 403b, but it's just something you have to keep in mind. You have to save all your end-of-year statements. And I know with computers now, the systems are pretty good at keeping them online, but don't trust it, because you might change 401k providers, you might roll it over into a different 401k, and then they've lost all that information. So keep your end-of-year statements forever so that when you go to take the money out, the IRS doesn't try to charge you tax on your post-tax contributions all over again. And if you didn't understand what I said, why don't you consider this strategy, which is what I've done. Everyone's different. My wife and I, contributions into our Roth IRAs. There's our post-tax. And then I put all pre-tax into my 403B. So just because I just hate this accounting stuff. I took accounting a million years ago when I left. I got A's, folks, in both classes I took. But when I left that class, the last class, I said, I ain't never doing that again. And, we love our accounting profs. They are awesome. Dear Professor Martinez and Haddad and Arteaga. But I'll tell you, I don't really enjoy accounting. It just, there's so many other great things to do in this life, and I apologize. I should really cut that out. Anyway, you understand? That's what I've done. I've put all the post-tax in the Roth IRAs, all the pre-tax in the 403Bs, and I don't have to worry about it. Everything that comes out of the 403B is taxable. Everything that comes out of the Roth IRA is not taxable. That's simple. And so let us conclude our first presentation on retirement with anticipated sources of retirement income. And folks, this is the Social Security Administration. These are the folks at the Social Security Administration talking. Look, Social Security was never meant to be your whole salary. It just never was meant to be that much. One leg of a three or four legged chair, or whatever analogy you want to use or metaphor. But somewhere along the line, people just got the idea that Social Security is going to take care of me. And a lot of them I've met, I told you, in Morelia and down in Mexico and they're living in Baguio in the Philippines because they can afford to live off their Social Security there. But trying to live off your Social Security in San Diego, oh my goodness. So get started now. Invest wisely, prudently, with an eye toward long-term growth. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for my indulgences. I apologize for them. But now we're going to turn our attention to a situation that, you know, it sounds scary, but it's really, you know, we're going to get through it. Obviously, we don't have any choice. The baby boom generation is retiring, and you see all kinds of articles and news items about retirement. Why? Because there's a whole lot of us old folks going through retirement right now, and we're handling it. But it's often called the baby boom generational time bomb, and it's going off right now, and that is the topic of our next presentation. So we'll see you as we discuss the time bomb that's ticking, and actually it's going off right now. It's not just one bomb, it goes off every year. So, see you in our next presentation.